We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code Spotify for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everybody. What is going on? Welcome to the Morning Grind here on rotogrinders.com. I am not Stevie. No, I am not. I am Dan Bach. The old school grinders know who I am. I used to do a podcast back in the day. Now I've moved up into the corner office and, you know, I break down numbers. But the opportunity to talk with the CEO of what is clearly the fastest growing and arguably the largest daily fantasy company out there today, it brought me back to my roots. So I needed to dust off the pipes a little bit, bring back the radio voice, because Adam Wexler from Prize Picks is going to join us. And today we're going to have a fun conversation talking about new products, their journey to the successful point that they're at today, what the future has in store. So let's jump on in with it. Adam Wexler, my man, it's been a long time that you and I have gone back, 2014, 15, around there when you were doing Side Prize. And here we are today, Prize Picks. Arguably, I don't want to say definitively, but arguably the largest daily fantasy company in the space today. What a journey, my man. How are you?
Doing really well. Good to see you, Dan. Good to be back and always enjoy a good conversation here.
Definitely. And before we get into the journey, I do want to start the show talking about a new product release, because I am super excited and I'm very much biased here because I live in Tennessee and I have not been able to play Prize Picks until today, until this morning. I get the press release that says Prize Picks Arena is here, a new version of Prize Picks that is moving into West Virginia, Tennessee, Wyoming, and Alabama. And it's a peer versus peer version of the game that people have come to love all throughout the country. Explain to me a little bit about Prize Picks Arena, why you guys did it, and exactly, you know, how this works. Because I think in my initial experience with it, it's not too much different from what I was playing, you know, in Florida a year and a half ago when I was on Prize Picks.
No, that's that's exactly correct. You know, obviously we started the business out of Atlanta. You know, I often describe, you know, our focus as being, you know, Atlanta rooted, but Southern focused. And yet there were certain states that we could not serve, you know, specifically because of the way, you know, that fantasy laws were constructed or licensing requirements. And specifically in Tennessee, that was one of those states where it's been made, you know, clear to us over time that peer-to-peer was a necessity. And Tennessee's not alone. There's a number of states throughout the country that, you know, have made it pretty clear that the only way that we were going to be able to operate there with a real money game would be peer-to-peer. And so, you know, we've always had it in mind that our flagship game, that where we've been able to serve, you know, roughly 30 states, about 70% of the country, at some point we were going to want to expand our map. And you know, 2023 is when we really got moving on, you know, innovation, you know, in that direction. And, you know, we released a free-to-play product in Michigan, you know, last fall. And then the big one that we've had in the works for a while now is this peer-to-peer concept. And we brought in some really great talent to help lead the charge here. You know, I think, Dan, you may know Brian Huss. You know, he's got a hell of a resume himself. He used to lead, you know, CBS Fantasy. And at one point in time, he was also with our friends at FanDuel, you know, among other stops. And so who better to, you know, really lead the charge related to a product like this than somebody like Brian, who's seen it all. And to your point, you know, we wanted to make it as close to resembling our flagship game as possible. And, you know, we wanted the experience to be as close to that as possible. And I think the guys did a really great job of accomplishing just that.
Yeah, I threw some entries in for today. I'm excited to see kind of what the sweat experience is around it compared to what it is previously, because instead of competing against, you know, the house per se, we're competing against other people who have the same buy-in entry as I do, the same number of entry legs as I do. So it's going to be interesting to see. Not only are you like sweating your own, but you're kind of hoping the people you're playing lose, which is very different than the current iteration where everybody is just all about their own entries and trying to beat Prize Picks. But I think the one component that I think is different from what we've seen Underdog do something similar to this, DraftKings rolled something out, is that I saw that you are matching with skill level. And that's a component that I have not seen elsewhere. And I'm wondering why you felt like that was an important piece of the product here when you rolled out this peer-to-peer aspect of this.
Yeah. I think one of the bigger things is, you know, we want people to, you know, keep coming back, right? And so what we experienced through the first wave of DFS, I've been in the industry long enough to recall those days, is that, you know, when you're playing against sharks every single day, it's not the most fun experience. And in our case, you know, we want to be able to match people up that have similar experience levels, you know, playing our game, but also similar success levels. And, you know, there's a lot of people who are just doing it for the fun of it, that are just trying to, you know, have some action down and make the games, you know, the games on the court, the field more, that much more exciting. There's other people that are really trying to profit off of this on a day in, day out basis. And so being cognizant of that and having people involved in the, you know, formulation of this product that, you know, really date back in the DFS community, definitely was a big consideration as well.
So we're going four states with this. And one thing that I think is going to be important for this product is to reach scale, because again, we're matching users up. So the more people you have, the more contests you can be in, the one experience you don't want is, you know, people trying to play and then not having enough people to play against. So where does this kind of fall in terms of the future of Prize Picks? I mean, we'll get into some of the regulatory stuff that's happening out there, but could you see in a few years time, like this really scaling as the product on Prize Picks, or is this simply a measure of, you know, trying to increase the map and understanding that like there's regulatory requirements that we have to follow, and this is a way for us to follow
them? Yeah, you mentioned four right now. By no means are we stopping at those four. Don't be surprised if we have more, you know, announcements in the coming, you know, months here. Because to your point, we definitely want to expand the pool. you know, in general, you know, one of the main objectives is to, you know, maximize our map, especially with real money contests. I don't know offhand kind of what that should look like, but what I can tell you is it's got to be north of 80% of the country that we should be able to serve with a real money game. Obviously, beyond that, you know, I think we also want to expand our map as it relates to free to play, because at the end of the day, we want as many people to be able to play these player prediction games, build lineups on a nightly basis with Prize Picks, and be a part of the general experience. But yeah, to your other question, you know, look, we've got our flagship game. There's a reason that we've become number one. So, you know, if we don't have to remove that game from a particular state, I don't think we intend to. But we think we've got a pretty good backup plan in any event that we may run into.
Well said. I want to just kind of talk about this journey a little bit and who Prize Picks is today, where you guys came from, because I've seen it from the beginning. I've been very clear in other podcast interviews that I was not a believer. Long ago, you know, you even came up to me and said, Dan, would you like to, you know, might have room on the cap table for you. Are you interested? And that's one of the biggest mistakes I think I've ever made in my financial life. And the sad thing is, you looked at the game very differently than I did at the time and saw the flaws that maybe existed in the salary cap game. And for me, kudos to you and the team, because I didn't see this coming. So I want to start with this question, because I hear it all the time on these commercials. I listen to the NBA NFL broadcast when I'm driving my kids around all over the place. Prize Picks is a monster sponsor. 7 million people have played Prize Picks. 7 million people. What is the number? How big is Prize Picks? How many users have you guys signed up? Because 7 million is a number way above what I was expecting it to be.
I don't know. I don't know if I can share numbers, but let's just say
got to be at least 7, right? Like, I mean, you said it on the commercial, right?
Our database exceeds 7 million. I can confirm that. We've got some interesting milestones, you know, in front of us as we wrap up this football season. But let's just say probably the thing that impresses me and the thing that I'm probably most proud of about our adoption is actually our retention and how many people are active on a monthly basis. I mean, there's a 7-figure number that are active on a monthly basis playing our game. And it just speaks to, you know, we've found product market fit. I think that's pretty clear. It speaks to the fact that sports fans around the country really just want to enhance their viewing experience. And that's exactly how we're positioning the product.
So what was the inflection point for you where it like completely turned? Because those early days of Prize Picks, you can acknowledge they were tough. I mean, it took a lot of time for this product to get to a point where, you know, we've seen widespread adoption. I mean, this is not a new business. You started, 2015, I think, right around there, 2015, 2016. And I think just within the last 3 to 4 years, we've seen just the momentum grow. What was that point for you? And why do you think it's happening? Because again, this isn't a new business. So why now and not 8 years ago?
Well, just to take you all the way back, you know, I got into the industry in 2014. I'm a season-long fantasy league consumer myself, playing multiple leagues. You know, every fall was my typical, you know, tradition. What got me in, just to quickly, you know, catch people up, is, you know, I would see the fantasy league commissioner complaining every fall. Nobody wanted to have that responsibility. Somebody had to step up and do it. And so the original prototype, the original product, was helping the fantasy league commissioner collect money from his friends. Quickly realized that was a very seasonal product. So we said, what else can we do with this digital treasure? That's what led us to repurposing it for the purposes of, you know, skill-based side bets. You know, these were things that, you know, friends and leagues were doing with each other. You know, I challenge you, Dan, I'm going to kick your ass. Let's put, you know, $100 on it. So Side Prize, our second product, built the hooks into the season-long platforms and kind of essentially created a daily game or a weekly game for the season-long format. And that started walking me down the path of, you know, daily fantasy. I, you know, started paying closer attention to what, you know, the likes of FanDuel and DraftKings were doing. But, you know, I would hear all these complaints about, I never win. You know, it's too hard. It's too complicated. And I was one of those consumers who, you know, who was looking at these games and saying, I got to know everything about every player. I got to know everything about everybody who I'm playing against. You know, there was some serious, you know, time requirements, you know, associated with a game like that. So the premise was always, you know, can we simplify the concept of daily fantasy? It's a great concept. Everybody loves fantasy sports to begin with, but, you know, can we just simplify it to the point that people can get in and out of an app in no time? And you know, ideally you put the proper research in so that you give yourself a better shot to win. And so that was where kind of, you know, Prize Picks got started. You know, the actual original incarnation of Prize Picks was, I'm spending all this time, you know, researching my own team in my season-long league. I feel very confident that Patrick Mahomes is going to, you know, go over 26 fantasy points that Yahoo's projecting him for, or whatever the platform may have been. But I want to put some real money behind that prediction. And so for the first couple of years, you know, all we allowed you to do was predict if they were going to go over or under their fantasy point projection. And then once, you know, one of the other groups in our category at the time, you know, Monkey Knife Fight, RIP, they were the ones who were really pushing the boundaries and, you know, were doing single statistic, you know, over under predictions. And we always knew that that could appeal to a larger number of people, but obviously, you know, we've had to be very cognizant of where the laws and regulations were, you know, at different, you know, points in time. And so when we finally got comfortable with that, ultimately, we took the leap and we haven't looked back. The one other thing I'd call out is that, you know, you talk about times were tough. Times were especially tough when sports around the world turned off, you know, right as we were ready to scale up that much further. And, you know, fortunately, you know, we righted the ship during 2020 and it was really in 2021 when we stepped on the gas and we haven't looked back since.
Yeah. And I think, you know, looking back at even Monkey Knife Fight, for example, versus what you have today, is you guys simplified the product so very well within app form, which is one thing I don't think they ever did. And I think it speaks volumes to what your goal was, because you nailed it, like simplifying daily fantasy sports. There's nothing simpler than just having pictures and, you know, stat categories that you need to pick higher or lower. Like, that's as easy as it gets. But the user interface, it sounds like it should be easy to develop. Monkey Knife Fight had years to figure it out and they never did. You guys nailed it. And was it simply a point of, okay, we survived, you know, COVID. We've gone through, you know, the ups and downs of figuring out the regulatory environment. And then all of a sudden saying, okay, we've got marketing funds and just being able to grow audience that way. Was it as simple as, like, once we get users, we feel like this is going to grow. And it was just a matter of finding whether it's investment capital or raising to just deploy marketing dollars. Was that the key to, like, developing scale here?
See, the simple answer is not, you know, it's not that simple. you know, UI UX is a huge part of that. Yeah. I think, on the surface, many people would look at the UI and say, this is so easy. I could build this. It's the UX that's the tough part. You know, one thing that we prioritized from the get-go was we're going to deliver a 6-star member experience, as we call it. You know, I took pages from different categories of in different industries. You know, I said, we're going to bring an American Express-like level of customer support to this industry that was not used to real-time question and answer. So I saw that as a very big opportunity. You know, similarly, we're going to always put our customers first. And so, you know, we've done industry leading, you know, policies such as the reboot policy that a lot of people know us for these days that, you know, hey, in traditional sports betting, they would never consider something like that. But they're not the ones creating our game. You know, we are creating a game, enhancing a game with every passing year. And we're doing it with the customer at the you know, epicenter of it all. And so, you know, another small example of something that we did that, you know, you may or may not, you know, see as a part of the future, as a part of a continued innovation, is what we did with Tyreek Hill. You know, when he got tackled in the playoffs behind the line of scrimmage and all of a sudden he went backwards. He had already hit his projection, but then he went backwards. And you know, we came in to the rescue for those that were riding with Tariq. And, you know, it's the least we can do for customers to ensure that they don't have a terrible customer experience.
Hey, I lived the Zion Williamson busted shoe promo that you guys did back in the day, and you guys made good on every single entry that people put that day. And that was a really eye-opening sign to say, hey, this isn't about short term. This is about long term. And, you know, I don't have the quote in front of me exactly, but we interviewed Nigel, the co-founder of FanDuel, not long ago. And he had some really kind words about Prize Picks. And one of the things that he said in particular was, the one thing Prize Picks has done better than anybody in this space is they figured out community, which is a testament to, you know, you and your team, I mean, not too many large businesses out there link their Discord on their apps like you guys do. You've built an amazing Discord community. But beyond that, there's been hundreds of Discord communities about Prize Picks built separately. And, you know, to me, that is a massive differentiator for your guys' product, is the tribalism that people have when they play it. And it really resonates. And I think that's been a huge advantage to you. And I almost think like the timing of it all too really works, because, you know, in 2015, 2016, we didn't have Discord servers. We didn't have Patreons. The creator economy didn't really exist back then, but it really seems to fit Prize Picks to a T. And I'm sure you guys have seen that and witnessed it and had to absolutely love the fact that, you know, people are coming together, almost, you know, again, building communities, trying to beat Prize Picks. I'm sure you guys are all about that, right?
Yeah, well, a couple of things there. You know, number one, you know, previous iterations of fantasy sports overall were all about competing against other people. And the way we kind of approach it is we want to encourage people to play together. You know, this is supposed to be a social experience, but it doesn't have to be you against the other person. It can be you with the other person. And so it kind of started with that premise from a social point of view. But then, you know, we also saw a big opportunity as it related to kind of building community, just like you said. And one of the things that we very consciously did was we you know, tackled this notion of building the community primarily through a Discord. We saw that as a great platform to kind of, it almost functioned as like this digital sports bar where everybody could convene, do their kind of research, almost crowdsource their research, talk about the picks and predictions that they were, you know, thinking about making. And then when the games actually took place, sweat it out in a communal fashion. You know, you get to celebrate or sulk, you know, with the community. And not only that, but, you know, one other thing that I'll kind of edit that you said there is, we never wanted to be viewed as the enemy. You know, at the end of the day, we're an entertainment provider. And I think one of the best examples that I can, you know, emphasize that with is what we do for like Taco Tuesday, right? So we don't have to give these discounts. We don't have to give you a better chance to win, but we want to. It's become a tradition with Prize Picks. And not just that, we want you to determine who's going to get the discounts, who's going to, you know, get the best opportunities to, you know, for those picks to hit, because you've got, you know, greater than 50% odds on these. And so we put it up to the community to make those determinations. And that allows the banter to go back and forth and the explanations about why it would be great to have this discount on that player as opposed to that one. You know, once again, everything that we're doing is very, you know, communal oriented. And we want to make sure that, you know, once again, we're not viewed as the enemy, but more so as just the person who's here to show you a good time.
I love it. And I really also, again, not just to shower you with compliments, but it's hard not to when you look at your business and how successful it is I think the way that you guys have the strategy you guys have taken in terms of how to market and who to market to is very different than what we've seen elsewhere. You guys have done a really good job partnering with influencers, and it's not always about necessarily people who may want to put money on a game. It's basically just, does this person like sports? And we've seen it even recently, you know, a deal with the Kelseys on their podcast, a deal with the OGs, you know, down in South Florida in their podcast. And, you know, it's very clear that, like, hey, we're just looking for people who like sports and people who finding a brand that has their own little tribal following. And I think it's really unique that you blend that with still being able to do large partnerships with the NFL on radio or all the different TV ads. But I think at the heart of it, from my perspective, a lot of those smaller deals that you might have done with influencers has paid off 10, you know, 100-fold for you, because those guys just, it's clear. Like, I see it all over YouTube. Like, it's everybody has got their communities, and I really want to like give you and your team credit for noticing that and saying, hey, we're not going to follow the same, you know, blueprint that FanDuel and DraftKings did when trying to scale their fantasy products, because yours is very different and you recognize that. And I think you made some really good decisions along the way.
I really appreciate that. And yeah, believe me, we got a whole team to thank for the collective decision. I'm the one in my role that just needs to make sure that we are positioned to be directionally correct. And as long as, you know, we infuse the right things in our DNA from day one and then, you know, adjust it along the way. You know, I'll give you a perfect example. One thing that I thought you might be kind of veering into is the fact that this product was actually originated as an add-on to the season-long format, right? But one of the things, and I should say more specifically, season-long fantasy football leagues. But one of the bigger things that we learned over the years was that actually this is the product that has largely solved the void that was fantasy basketball. You know, fantasy basketball had never figured out. You saw the NBA just rising in popularity, and yet fantasy basketball was not. And I think that was largely attributed to the fact that there was never a format that was that you could really pair with it to really enhance the sports viewing experience. And I think that our simplified version of Daily Fantasy did just that, because the common refrain is, do you think LeBron's going to drop 25 tonight or not? And that's the essence of our game. And so when you build a lineup of those predictions, it's something that a lot of basketball fans can really latch onto.
So I get asked a lot, because I love industry talk. You know, it's kind of what I grew up doing here on this podcast long ago. And a lot of people are like, what's the storyline of 2024 and in the world of pay for play sports, fantasy sports, gambling? And for me, it's like, what is going to happen with Pick'em DFS? Because we have seen that the game has become under fire from regulators in a number of states, Michigan in particular, which is a story I don't even understand how all of a sudden for years you were looked at and as just perfectly fine fantasy product, paid your taxes like the other fantasy operators, and then one day they said, nope, this isn't what we meant, even though for years, you guys have been operating there. What is happening here? Why is Pick'em Fantasy coming under fire from so many different gaming regulators or attorney generals or whomever else is trying to change the way people can play Pick'em Fantasy out there? Why is this happening?
Yeah, well, I called it out in a recent interview. And I'll kind of repeat what I said at one that was published at the beginning of the year. What caught me by surprise was that the states where it became that much more debatable was the states where we already possessed licensing, and we had already gone through all the process to get licensed and be a good tax-paying citizen. Some things that came out were that. At this point, have been proven factual. Is take Wyoming, right? There was a cease and desist that was sent to Pick'em operators out of Wyoming, but it was then discovered that there was a lobbyist on behalf of some of the incumbent daily fantasy operators that had specifically repeatedly asked the AG to take action on our companies, let's just say the incumbents have been trying to, they've been taking notice of our success and our growth, and they've been, because they haven't felt comfortable taking part in our category, they would, rather resort to some anti-competitive behavior to try to, squash our growth. As I also said, were you about to say something?
I mean, how does that make you feel though, as somebody who was on the FSTA board for years, especially in 2015, 2016, where the FanDuels and the DraftKings of the world were on the brink of going broke and having it banned all throughout the country. I mean, we all can remember back to that time where, New York outlawed it. It seemed like we were on the brink of just losing DFS altogether. And you were part of this organization that, brought people together, brought the operators together, brought the fans together, and said, we're not going to let this happen. And now these same people that you worked with to achieve this goal, which made many of these people and these businesses worth, you know, billions of dollars, are now like, no, we're gonna go against these guys because they're getting too big. From a personal side of things, I'd be pretty disappointed about that, because I know you were in the, you know, you were into it. Like, this wasn't like you're just an outsider who started a popular company. No, you were, you know, fighting with these other businesses years ago. And now years later, it's like, forget about that. Like, we're going to take you down because you're becoming too big. That's gotta be hard on you. I would think so, a little bit, from a personal angle.
Yeah. And I appreciate you calling it out. You know, I was, to your point, I was on the FSGA board for 5 years, and you know, I was there when we put in place, you know, the core values, and some of those core values were supporting being pro business and pro innovation. And so to see, you know, not only certain operators be anti innovation and anti, you know, business and anti competitive, you know, look, the thing about our category that is that I can't stress enough is that it's not a winner take all. You know, we have direct competitors inside of our category, and we're not being anti-competitive with them. You know, so the approach that I could see why there was that angle was kind of infused in DFS salary cap, because it was a little bit of a winner take all, you know, kind of, you know, category. But you don't have that with this one. And this one, you know, at the end of the day, the people that lose the most, especially when games are taken away from them that they love to play, are the sports fans. And I think we're losing sight of that, you know, while there's these technical debates, you know, that are taking place. And once again, you know, many of these debates that are, you know, being discussed at the regulator level are not because many regulators woke up one morning and took issue with us. It's because they were seated by some other competitors that are just being anti-competitive.
Yeah. And I think, like we alluded to a little bit earlier, is, you know, this Prize Picks arena game. I feel like, and you alluded to it as much as you can, like, you know, this is our quote unquote, not backup, but this is a way for us to understand what is happening and what could potentially happen further in the future, and have a plan, so therefore we can still operate this game that people enjoy to play. And, you know, I'm not surprised to see it. It was just a matter of time. And I hope everybody out there gives a chance. But I want to kind of now move forward a little bit, because there's one thing that's very obvious. Like, we maybe were pretty critical of them here today and some of the stuff we talked about, but FanDuel and DraftKings, without question, are the top two sports betting companies in the United States today. They both also came from the world of daily fantasy, which is where PrizePicks lives today. PrizePicks is arguably bigger, and definitely bigger, than FanDuel and DraftKings were years ago. Probably bigger than them they are today, if you looked in terms of maybe pure users and the DFS side of things. So the question has to be, like, is there plans for PrizePicks to make that change, like we've seen these other DFS operators make, and not necessarily pivot, but offer a sports betting product? Because we've seen the success of brands, established brands, make this change and become super, super successful. So I'm not expecting you to say, yeah, we're going to do it tomorrow, but you can't be naive to the fact that, you know, we've seen this blueprint before and work. And you guys right now are in a great, great position to potentially follow that lead.
I can tie a number of things that we've discussed kind of, you know, together here. You know, number one, one of the biggest reasons for our success to date has been our laser-like focus. We are as focused, if not more focused, than any other operator on just doing one thing and doing it incredibly well and being the best in the world at that. And for that reason, it's why we can continue to iterate and innovate on that particular, you know, prediction type. In the case of ours, it's more or less on these player projections on a nightly basis. in terms of, you know, one thing I did want to say about the peer-to-peer offering, because I do want to just, you know, make sure it's properly framed. first and foremost, peer-to-peer is our expansion opportunity to continue to introduce real money gaming across the country and service other jurisdictions that we haven't been able to enter just yet. It also conveniently enough serves as a backup in case any of the regulatory environment changes. So I just wanted to, you know, call that out. But when you combine what we've got with our flagship game that we've been running for, you know, seven football seasons, this peer-to-peer product that, you know, obviously just came out just today that we're super excited about, and then the free-to-play product that we're going to continue to expand on as well, we would love nothing more than to stay in our existing lane. I also mentioned, you know, earlier, you know, we're an Atlanta-rooted, Southern-focused company that just so happens to also serve, you know, a good bit of the rest of the country. But the fact of the matter is, a great majority of the South to this day remains without the access to legal mobile betting options. You know, you guys have it in Tennessee. North Carolina is going to turn on before you know it. But you still got states like, you know, Georgia, Alabama, all the way out through Texas, the, you know, South Carolina. These states don't have access to legal mobile betting. Who knows when we're going to get them? So the way we think about our business is very much in line with kind of how do we best serve sports fans throughout the South? And, you know, that will help guide kind of our decision making in the future.
I think that is a very fair and interesting answer. And I still think it's a fascinating business to watch. And it's really cool to even see you grow as somebody, because running a startup versus running a company at scale, I mean, what's the biggest differences for you? Because you're doing both. Like, a lot of times it gets to a point where you're the startup, you grow, and then somebody else moves in, but you've stuck in the CEO's chair the entire time. So talk to me a little bit about the differences in running a business from those early days to now, where you have 7 million plus, whatever that number is, users on the platform.
Yeah, there's definitely a difference between being the founder and the CEO. Personally, I think, to be honest, I have a lean towards being the founder. That's where I really, you know, get the most amount of joy. You know, what comes along with the CEO of being a company at our scale and size these days, there's a lot more things to manage. You know, there's a lot more people to manage. There's a lot more dynamics to manage. There's just a lot more in general to manage. You know, we're a big boy company at this point, and we've got to you know understand what comes along with the territory. What's also great is you know, with the state of this business, we're able to recruit some incredible talent. So the people that we've brought on board, especially over the last year, you know, just the caliber of people across our organization, from, you know, not just within the industry, but, you know, we're bringing in people that have, you know, places like Meta and Uber and you know, all the great media companies, you know, into this business. You know, there's so many great, you know, minds at the table now. And once again, it's my job just to make sure that we're going directionally correct. And I trust that the team's got it from there, largely speaking.
Well, looking at the success of the business, I think you're guiding it in the right spot, and the team is executing, because the growth is phenomenal, bigger than I would have ever thought. And I think it's just the beginning too, depending on what the future looks like in the real money gaming space. So Adam, it's a pleasure to talk again. We've had these conversations in the past, first time we've done it, I think maybe ever in a podcast, but congrats on all the success. I'm excited to get back into the Prize Picks streets here in Tennessee with the new Prize Picks arena game. So again, that's West Virginia, Tennessee, Wyoming, Alabama, and likely more to come down the road. So keep your ears out and be sure to check out that Prize Picks app. Thanks again, Adam. Great conversation, my man. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Dan.